So I want you to think back for a moment now over your life, and I want you to think of the best advice that you were given that you ignored. What was the best advice that you were given that you ignored? Now, we don't want to get too sad here today, but does anybody want to share any advice that you remember somebody gave you and you decided, I'm just going to ignore that, and you say, I should have done that. Learn how to study. What is it?
Stop driving.
Okay. Without a license. Well, yeah. That's a good one there. Any other advice?
You don't always have time to have a last
word. Okay. You don't always have to have the last word. I think we could tell some funny stories in here today. About advice that we were given, and we said, oh, I should have done that. I should have listened. Because there was probably somebody else, and we've all had this happen, somebody that maybe had been around a lot longer than we had, and they could see the picture because they stood outside of our situation, and they could see things a lot better than we could. And they basically said something like, listen, you better read the writing on the wall here. You better understand what's happening here. And for some reason, we decided that we didn't want to listen. I was reading an online forum discussing this very topic, and one woman said, I was ignoring the most obvious things in life until I turned 40. And she went in to talk about the things that she started to appreciate that she had ignored earlier in her life. She said, I didn't appreciate family enough. She said, I had ignored saving money. She said, if I had saved $200 a month in my 20s, I would have $2 million in my 60s due to compound interest. I think we can all relate to things like this. She said, I ignored my health. She said, I didn't watch my weight. By the time I paid attention, I was overweight. And we all know about this. And she said, I ignored my teeth. Now, we all remember going to the dentist when we were younger, right? And the dentist, what did the dentist tell us? Brush 2 times a day and floss, right? Well, not everybody likes to floss. That's a pain in the neck, having to brush 2 times. And we all remember this, but it's such an inconvenience. And then they recommend you go to the dentist 2 times a year for cleanings, and that's expensive. And so we kind of skip. We don't worry about that. She said, when I finally went to the dentist, all my teeth had to be pulled, and I needed dentures. And she said, I'm only 53 years old. We all know what it is to get advice and to ignore it, even if it's obvious. Now today, what I want to challenge you with is this truth that God has given us clear messages, clear truths. They're obvious. It's like they're written on the wall right before us. And if we ignore these messages, it's going to impact every area of our life, and it's going to have eternal consequences. So we've been in a sermon series in the book of Daniel. Last week we saw that with Daniel's help, he was working with King Nebuchadnezzar. God had humbled this king, and through Daniel's ministry, God leads the king to change the way he governs. And the king ends up changing, and he ends up fearing God. But in Daniel chapter 5, the scene changes. Now this takes place some 70 years later. Nebuchadnezzar had died. His 2 sons had fought over the kingdom. Ultimately, another king takes the throne, and he had married one of Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughters. So he wasn't actually a bloodline son. He becomes king, and his name is Belshazzar. And he's actually the in-law grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. In the opening verses of chapter 5, we see what kind of king he was. Belshazzar throws a big banquet. He invites 1,000 of his leaders, his officials in government, military leaders, priests, wives, and concubines. He invites everybody. And with such a big crowd, it ended up being a big drinking party, which is very common. And we see now, as we look at this king, we see that he had very little regard. He had zero regard for the God of the Hebrews. In fact, he does something to make a statement about this God. He has the gold vessels originally used in the temple for spoons, cups, bowls that his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple when he destroyed it. And he has these dishes brought out, and they are used in the worship of the Babylonian gods. So while they were using these objects, they were worshiping the gods of Babylon. So the king is just, he's drunk with power. He doesn't show any respect for God. He's kind of being in your face with it. And it was sometime during this time, whether it was the first toast or when the wine got flowing a little bit, God intervenes in the situation. So look with me at Daniel chapter 5, and I'm going to be reading verses 5 through 9. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, diviners. Then he said to these wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew more pale, and his nobles were baffled. So there wasn't a trumpet blast. There wasn't a thundering voice from heaven. There wasn't an earthquake. Very simply, a hand appears. You can't see the rest of the body. The rest of the body is invisible. All you see is a hand. You're looking at the back of the hand. And that finger writes four words on the wall, on the plaster wall. So the partying stopped. The music stopped. The dancing girls stood motionless, and everybody looked at the writing on this wall. The king was totally freaked out. His face grew white. The Bible says literally that his knees were knocking. So like his grandfather-in-law, so many years before, he calls all of his wise men in. He calls the scholars in and the religious leaders to tell him what these words mean. But like most politicians, he offers them money. If you tell me what these mean, I'm going to give you all these benefits. He wants an answer. Well, they can't figure it out. The words were written in Aramaic, so it was legible, but it didn't convey any meaning to them. They were supposed to have all these divine means to be able to decode what it meant, but the words meant nothing to them. So now we have the mother-in-law making the appearance. You know, mothers have a way of finding out what's going on in your life, you know. Grandmas have a way of finding out things too. And so the queen mother hears what's going on. Now Belshazzar wasn't at the banquet. Maybe she heard in the background some commotion, and she comes out and she says, "May the king live forever." And she says, "Son, don't look so pale. There's someone in your kingdom that can help." And I remember it when I was a child. My father was being troubled by dreams, and there was this man named Daniel who was called Belshazzar by the king, who interpreted his dream. He was put in charge of all the scholars and magicians. "Son, he's right here in your kingdom. So call Daniel. He will tell you what it means." You know, mamas give great advice, don't they? Even mother-in-laws should listen to them. So Daniel is brought before the king. So the king starts buttering him up. "Are you Daniel, who my grandfather brought out of exile?" See, the king knows the history of how Daniel came to Babylon. He tells Daniel, "I've heard about you. I've heard about how you give accurate dream interpretations. I mean, you're better than anybody in the whole kingdom here. If you can read these words on the wall, I will give you royal clothing. I will give you a chain of gold, and I will make you the third highest ruler in my kingdom. Now, we don't know exactly why Daniel wasn't invited to the banquet. Was he in semi-retirement? Was he in poor health? Most scholars believe that Daniel was in his 80s, probably about 81 years old. We should just make a brief comment here that this is a good reminder to say that there is no retirement for Christians. You know, I've had people tell me, "Preacher, I'd like to help, but I'm retired." Well, Christians, there is no retirement. God has work for you to do, regardless of what age you are. And I've also made an observation that people in their 80s start getting a little more outspoken. Has anybody ever noticed this? Just an observation. And it's what I've seen. And that's Daniel. If you look at his response, he says, basically, keep your gifts to yourself. Give them to someone else. But he says, I will read the writing for the king, and I'll tell you what it means. Now, we've all been told obvious advice in our lives, and we've ignored it. But today I want you to listen to Daniel, because he gives three messages that we can apply to our lives that's going to bless us and it's going to save us trouble in our own lives. The first message is to learn from the examples in your family. So Daniel, he goes and he examines the writing on the wall. And before he interprets the writing, he gives the king a history lesson from the king's own family. The first words he gives the king are words from God. And you know, when he asked Daniel something, he was going to tell you what God said. He reminded the king of how blessed his grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had been and how powerful his kingdom was. But then he points out what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. This is in verses 20 and through 22. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from the people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High God is sovereign over all kingdoms on the earth and sets them over anyone he wishes. Daniel tells this king what happened. He reminds him what happened in his own family history and how Nebuchadnezzar had been struck with a mental disease because of his arrogance. Verse 22 is very telling. Belshazzar, you have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. See, the king was wrapped up in his own life. He was wrapped up in partying. He was wrapped up in pleasing himself. And he should have taken warning from his own family. You know, we all have our own families, right? We all know our family history. We also know family members in our own families that have made terrible mistakes here. So when I was growing up, I don't know if you can flip it here, April. I've got a picture of my, there we go. I had a picture of my father's father. Now, he wasn't involved in our life growing up. I only met him. This would be my grandpa on my dad's side. My dad's dad. I only met him a couple times. He wasn't involved. And my dad was very careful not to say a lot of negative things about him. But he did warn us. He said, he would tell us, don't be like my dad. He was an alcoholic. And he died from his alcoholism. Don't be like my dad. He would say some people have it in their genetics, a weakness that one drink of alcohol can have them hooked. So I grew up afraid of drinking alcohol. I did. I thought one simple drink was going to make me an alcoholic. I was worried about that. And I'm glad I never went down that road. I'm glad I was warned about that. My dad warned me about his example, and had I decided to drink, I probably could have easily become an alcoholic. So my dad was very careful to observe the lesson that his own father had taught him. It sounds so simple. How often we ignore those simple lessons from our family. But why do we go down the same road? Why do we end up making the same mistakes that our grandpa or our dad or our mom make? Why do we do that? We need to read the writing on the wall. Take lessons from your relatives. We don't have to become like our family. At the same time, I want to ask you, who's the Christian voice in your family? Who is the voice that tells you, listen, you should be in church? Who is the one that tells you, you need to read your Bible? You need to pray. Who is it that is the godly example? Who tells you, if I were you, I'd be careful? Or how about this one? I don't think I would do that. God has put someone in your life to listen to. The Apostle Paul, in writing to the young preacher Timothy, writes in 2 Timothy 1:5, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice. The preacher Timothy has godly examples in his life, examples who witnessed to them. So are we listening to those people? We have to avoid the bad examples, but are we listening and learning from those who are examples of faith in our life? Daniel gives us messages to live by. Second message, remember, God will not be mocked. I picture the scene. Daniel is now in his 80s, and he's called before the king, and I picture him kind of walking up kind of slow. So what does he tell the king? He tells the king the truth. Look at verses 22 and 23. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and your nobles and your wives and your concubines drink wine from them. You praise the gods of silver, gold, of bronze, iron, wood, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor God, who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. This king is so arrogant. Not only did he worship other gods, he had a special disdain. He showed this by these dishes. He makes a point of bringing these dishes that used to be used in the temple of God, and now he uses them in some kind of drunken orgy here. Daniel says, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. Well, we're seeing this today in our government. Not only are they not Christian, but they have a special disdain for Christians. Now, I'm going to just bring up a controversial topic here. But the problem is the church, over the years, has been avoiding these topics, and that's why we're in the problems we're in our world right now. Genesis chapter 5, verse 2 says, in the beginning, God created male and female. There are only two genders. But there are decisions being made intentionally despite Christians in the face of God. So I'm going to show you a picture here. April, if you would advance it one. Yes. Here is a man that dresses like a woman. Goes by the name of Rachel Levine. He has been appointed as the Assistant Secretary of State. Now this is a pediatrician, my friends. This is someone who treats children. This individual in a position of leadership advocates sex change operations for children. I'm sorry to have to bring this up from the pulpit, but this is what's happening in our government right now. Do you see how God is being mocked. It isn't just the government, okay? There are many people out there that just live their lives in open sin, total rejection of God. They don't care what anybody says. They don't care what God says. But the king is going to regret his decision. Galatians 6:7 is a warning to each of us. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man sows what he reaps. The message to us is that we have to live in this holy awareness that God knows how we're living. God will bless us. He wants good for our lives. But we better act with respect toward Him. If we are living a life of sin, He knows about that. Now the third message from Daniel. Remember, your life is in God's hands. So Daniel confronts this king for mocking God, for worshiping false gods. And then in Daniel chapter 5, verses 23, the last part of the verse, he says, "But you did not honor God." And he says, "Who holds in His hand your life and all your ways." We live with this idea today. I can live my life however I want because I'm in control of my destiny. But it's not true. God is in control. He holds our lives in His hand. So Daniel interprets these words on the wall. So look at verses 25 through 28. This is Daniel. This is the inscription that was written, "Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson." Here is what the words mean. Mene: God has numbered your days and your reign brought to an end. Tekel: you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres: your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So Daniel has four words to interpret. And the basic literal interpretation of these words is, it's the first one is a larger weight, the second one is a half weight, and the third one is a smaller weight. And so then Daniel gives the interpretation. King, he says, you've been measured by God. You have been weighed in the balance, and you have been found lacking. So your reign will be brought to an end. Your kingdom will be divided between the Medes and the Persians. Not good news for the kingdom, for the king. But the king doesn't really seem too fazed by it, because he goes ahead and gives Daniel a reward. So the king doesn't seem too worried. He didn't have anything to worry about. Babylon seemed totally impregnable. It was surrounded by a huge moat. There was a huge wall. There was 100 strong gates. I mean, there could be an army camped outside of your city, and they would not even be worried about it. So King Belshazzar didn't know it. He was too arrogant to be concerned. But a historian recorded that the water had sunk in the moat low due to lack of rain. And the troops, the enemy troops, waded through the water, which was up about thigh length. And they climbed the walls, and they got into this city while the banquet was going on. And the army didn't even know it. And they ended up taking the king out. That's the end of the chapter. The king is taken out, and a new king is taking his place. And it happened after Daniel spoke these words to him. Daniel would go on to do more work for the Lord with a new king. I've got one more sermon out of Daniel. We're going to be talking about Daniel and the lion's den next Sunday. But we should take a lesson from what happened here. No matter how strong, no matter how invincible a nation thinks they are, when her leaders start thumbing their fingers at God with their policies, He's going to act. So are we reading the writing on the wall? You know, we sometimes live like we have all the time in the world, like we're invincible. Sometimes we live like our finances are untouchable. Our life is unshakable. The king felt like he had nothing to worry about. But we must realize, each and every one of us, that everything we have could be taken away very quickly. One failure, one accident, one health emergency, and it could all be brought to an end. For the Christian, we know that we're going to stand before the Lord. Everybody's going to stand before the Lord, in fact. We're not worried because we are forgiven. But we're all going to stand before Him. 2 Corinthians 5:10 says, "For we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each of us may receive what is due us." We're all going to be weighed in the balance. Well, the people that have made the most difference in my life are those people that live with the awareness that they will stand before God, that they will give an account. They live with the awareness that God was watching them and that they were serving Him. So let me ask you a question. If God were to write you a message on the wall, if He had a message specifically written to you for your life, what would the message be? What would He be telling you to do? What would He be telling you not to do? See, Jesus is speaking to us today. What is God telling you? Well, people ignore advice all the time. I was reflecting when I was doing this sermon over the many Bible studies I've had over the years of individuals that we've looked at how a person is saved. And I've got the Bible, and they've had a Bible in their hands, and we've looked at it, and we've studied what the Scripture says, and they were very kind. They were very respectful when we went through the study, and they appreciated the time, but they had no desire. They had no desire to do what the Bible said. They were ignoring the best advice I ever could have given. I gave them an opportunity for eternal life. But they decided, for whatever reason, this is not what they wanted. One of the reasons people don't make decisions for Jesus is that they think they have time. They think they have enough time to do it. I want you to think just for a second about those people or those things in your life that you wanted to do. You think back about 10 years ago. Can you think of something that at that time, 10 years ago, you said, you know, I should really do blank. Can you think of something? And maybe you said, well, I'm going to do it next week. Or I'm going to do it in the spring when it warms back up. And pretty soon, what happens? A year goes by, right? And another year goes by. And pretty soon, 10 years have gone by. And you think back, you say, well, at one time I wanted to do this. See, the hard thing about making a decision for Jesus is not understanding what we have to do. It's actually doing it. It's actually following through and doing, going through what Jesus tells us to do. Well, the Bible's clear what we need to do. We believe and we turn from our sin. We confess Jesus. We're baptized. This is what we do. We just have to do it. We have to really discipline ourselves and make the step to do it. So we're going to have our song of invitation, an invitation to you soon and very soon. We're going to see the King. Let's all stand as we sing.